Hi, welcome to the Hard Reset Podcast. This is, see, now I'm...
Oh, you don't like it now, huh? So everyone laughs when it's Nick.
What's the tagline of the show?
This is Hard Reset, a series about rebuilding our world from scratch.
Hey, all. My name is Rob Chapman Smith. I'm the editor-in-chief of Freethink, and I'd like to welcome you all to the Hard Reset Podcast. Joining me today is Nick Tucker, one of the co-creators of the show.
Hello.
Taylor Hamilton, another co-creator of the show.
Hi.
And Toby Morishanu, who is the guy who answers all of your comments.
Nailed it.
Nice. We did that a couple of times. So today we're going to be talking about the second episode of Hard Reset, which is about iMod. But Nick, I wonder if you could just summarize what that episode is about for us.
Sure. So this was a hard reset on how we build buildings, not just how we build buildings, but how we think of them as a resource. So iMod is a company that makes these big metal frames. They look like container frames because they're the same dimensions and they have the same connector types, but they've been re-engineered to be used for buildings, and they have infrastructure in them that allows you to connect electricity and HVAC and all that. So you can very rapidly assemble, you know, infrastructure.
You know, we talked about this as being a hard reset for buildings, but it's not about just buildings, because we don't build buildings in isolation. So can you talk about some of the other like net effects that we could see in terms of a hard reset for this that we talk about in the episode?
Sure. So I think, you know, buildings, we build buildings where we live, and we live in cities and towns and communities, and those are changing all the time, right? You know, we're moving from place to place. Certain towns or cities become popular and then less popular. Certain types of activities become popular and unpopular. The example we use is the mall, where like a mall gets popular, it's huge, it's this big thriving thing, and then everyone's like, I don't want the mall, I want Amazon. And then what happens to that giant structure? There's all this infrastructure, and we just have to basically tear it down, and it's useless now. It's just junk. You can't really recycle a lot of the elements, like cement and things like that. And so if you had buildings that could not just be built quickly, but taken apart and reused in other places, could our whole infrastructure, our built infrastructures, follow human activity more closely?
I think one of the things, and you guys get into this in the episode, the idea of sort of plight is like a huge aspect of why this is an interesting hard reset, because it is just so hard to do stuff with things that are built.
Right.
And like we, you know, one, because people have attachments to them.
Right.
But two, just because once they fall in disrepair, that requires a whole bunch of other additional resources in order for us to do something.
Right.
And so this idea of a modular building is just a massive hard reset mm-hmm. for basically what we can do with these things that we spend most of our time in. I'm curious, how did y'all find this story?
It's actually an answer for Taylor.
My dad has known these guys for a lot of years. And so my dad worked for the LA Unified School District. And so he built a bunch of schools. And, you know, the mandate was that there's 84,000 students that need seats in LAUSD, go build a bunch of schools and as quickly as possible, right? Now, the whole thing with building a school is that you don't want to build it so quickly that, you know, you're going to have something that, you know, falls and hurts children, right?
To be clear, when buildings fall on children, it does more than hurt them.
Teaches them about gravity.
They're also learning, Taylor.
I don't know physics. So he, I think through that, you know, met these guys that have been doing this for a while. And actually, one of their main things is building schools that don't fall on children.
Always a plus.
Yeah.
And one of the stories that Craig, who was part of the company at the time, was talking about is how they had, you know, as student populations would be very, very, you know, dense in one part of town, that they would build schools there, and then suddenly that wasn't the place where people were raising kids anymore. And they need schools on this other part of town, and those are being, you know, left derelict essentially. So being able to move these resources to match the movement of people is a really important thing for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you rewind 3 years ago to where we are now, just think about the number of people and the stories about people moving to Texas, you know, moving to Nashville, you know, a bunch of people moving to California. You know, people are moving. And the pandemic obviously really pushed a lot of that forward. But the other thing is that, you know, industries and companies shift so quickly, and it just propels so much movement for lots of different people. And because that stuff moves so quickly, like, how does our built environment, where it sometimes takes years and years, if not decades, how does that react really quickly?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even a great potential thing for even inside cities. I mean, with schools, you know, locally, for example, in my neighborhood, one of our schools is at like 30% capacity. Meanwhile, other ones are, you know, derelict or falling into disrepair. It'd be great to just be able to move part of it there and then have the other lands that is now empty used for housing, which we really need in my neighborhood, right. For example. You know, we've got strip malls in my neighborhood that are half empty. And it'll be great if when that store went out of business, they could actually literally sell the store to be built into something else. There's a lot of people talking about, like, can we convert office space that's not being used into residential housing? And it's very difficult when you have a permanently built building because of, you know, different water requirements and stuff like that. But if you could take it apart and retrofit those elements and rebuild it that way, it could be a lot easier.
Yeah.
There's a both a Facebook page and a subreddit that I think is really interesting when talking about just like how permanent buildings are. It's a thing called Dead Mall Enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's kind of sad because it's just like memories of America's past, essentially. Right. And it's just like, oh, it'd be really great to just like reuse this land, this resource in an intentional way. And then thinking about like, oh, if we built all of those malls out of like IMOD like structures, like we wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, we have to figure out a way of shifting these resources around really quickly. And, you know, you and I both live in Los Angeles where like the thing that is going to determine the mayoral race is homelessness or, housing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Homelessness and housing are inextricably linked together and we just need a lot more housing, period, in so many of these places. And that housing, you know, it's expensive. Like anytime you see these like budget proposals for, you know, building all these different units and then people want to build, I think right now in Boyle Heights, they want to build, you know, convert an old Sears building and put 10,000 homeless people in there. And there's lots of uproar around that, right? And so it's like, well, is that the right thing? Or how are you distributing this? What happens to that Sears, you know? And so I was reading this article yesterday and I was like, what if it was IMOD? That you know, how would they have like changed that entire landscape?
Yeah.
Well, there's another element to this why this episode is so fascinating. There's, I think, a zeitgeist-like feeling that it's difficult for Americans to build.
Yeah.
Right now. And if you look at how long it took us to build the Empire State Building, we did that relatively quick compared to some of the things that we are building now. And there's a sort of like an iconic example of there was a bathroom at a San Francisco, I believe a San Francisco public transit station. It's taken more than 30 years to build. They did a ribbon cutting and it's still not in use for public. They did a ribbon cutting before it was like in public use. I think they have like a year left, but like it's taking us that long to build a bathroom. Right. And then you think about like, oh, well, here comes IMOD. Not only can you build it, it can be modular and you can do all of that really quickly. It's an interesting like entry into this whole narrative around can America build again?
To well, be fair, great bathroom.
It's a wonderful bathroom. That's free. But it's can we build and can we reuse it?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of technologies out there that are all focused on building things more quickly, like 3D printing for homes and a lot of factory built homes. And I think that's all super interesting and valuable. What stands out about this one is not that it can be built quickly. It can, but you can take it all apart mm-hmm. and not have any loss of structural integrity. So I think we all are familiar with like IKEA furniture where it's great, you build it, but if you take it apart and put it back together again, it's not gonna be as sturdy. And you can only do that maybe once and then it's essentially firewood. And to me, the thing that really sets IMOD apart is not just that you can build and put these together quickly, but then without really losing any integrity or value of that infrastructure, take it apart, ship it on trucks, on ships, and trains, and move it anywhere else and reassemble it into a totally different configuration. And that's just a game changer for this.
One of the things that's interesting to think about with this, and you know, there's an aspect of this story that the audience isn't even aware of. And it gets into like reasons whether we should believe this story or not, which is that IMOD, before the episode came out, actually went out of business.
Right.
And to me that, you know, when we look at this capability that this company is creating, there's an aspect of like, is this actually feasible and scalable? Is there an actual business here? Mm-hmm. And part of that answer was no, they kind of went out of business. But I would love for you all to talk about that and then the update, if there is any, about like, how real this idea is or is in practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we, as we were editing this, I believe we found out that they were going to be closing up. They essentially had some issues with their investors and they were going to close up shop. And we debated whether or not we should, how much we should address that in the release. And I think we decided to release anyway, obviously, because the idea is what's important here, not the individual company. But we actually found out just recently that they are reopening. So Reed Walker, who we feature in the video, is restarting the company. He has bought back the intellectual property and is going to be restarting it. They are starting up operations again. They found a new partner. And when I talked to Reed, he actually mentioned they were working up in Butte County to potentially help with rebuilding after the campfire, which, of course, destroyed Paradise, California. And so there's some potential that they might be helping to rebuild in some of these areas that have been really destroyed by fires in the last few years. So there is some hope that this is a structural solution we'll see start to really hit the ground.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's also like so fitting that his company went out of business and he disassembled it, moved it, and then reassembled
it. It's very on brand.
Yeah, he's very on brand.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Speaking of brand, I do want to mention this, is that they've changed the name from iMod Structures to iMod Systems. So if you're looking for them, it's imodsystems.com.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll throw that in the description of the video as well.
I could also talk about that, you know, with any number of these companies, there's like the idea or the product, and then there's all the other business stuff. In terms of how are you marketing? You know, how much cash do you have? Like, what else is happening there? And I don't think that there was ever anything wrong with like the product or the idea. And, you know, I think it's a testament that the business has come back, that the idea is that powerful. Because, like, we just need stuff. And what I think is actually really interesting about this episode and the entire idea behind it is that if you're down with something like an iMod structure, it means that you're inherently wanting a building that's pretty boring, right? And like, we take so much value and pride in the kind of places that we occupy in terms of like, oh, it needs to have this grand atrium and I want to be in an office space with like this or that. But in reality, like a lot of things don't need to be that interesting, right? Like, does my doctor's office really need to be that interesting, right? Does it need to be that special? Do I care that much about that,
right?
And at the end of the day, does like paint or the decorations or the furniture in there, is that more important than the actual physical structure? At the end of the day, most things are boxes. These are just boxes that you can just like put a lot of them together in whatever configuration you want.
Yeah.
I mean, when we went and visited the school near Sacramento, like I would not have been able to tell that that was like one of these structures, one of these modular structures, unless someone had told me that it was.
Yeah. And it's a nice classroom.
Yeah.
And it
looks like a classroom.
It looks like a classroom.
Just looks like a classroom.
It felt like one, and it felt super sturdy and secure.
Yeah.
I've been in the temporary classrooms that you see kind of thrown up, the double wides essentially, that you see at a lot of schools, and they feel flimsy.
Right.
They don't feel good. And this felt like a real solid structure. And it is a real solid structure. I mean, their engineering on this is through the roof in terms of earthquake safety and all that, because, you know, the safety requirements for building schools are especially hard. And I think it's telling.
And in California.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really telling that that's what they tackled first.
Right.
They didn't go after like, oh, this is like a single bedroom, tiny house. Like, no.
There's such a need.
Yeah.
Right? It's an amazing need there. I mean, and I think one of the things that's really interesting about this idea and whether it's actually adopted is like a lot of people want to be able to go back to their high school or wherever and be like, oh yeah, and this is where like this happened and blah, blah, blah. And I took class here, da, da, da. And it's like in this type of future, your school might not be there.
Right.
Like it might have just vanished.
But it could come to you.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of high school reunion.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like you're giving that aspect of permanence up, but on the other side, we're getting something.
Yeah.
Do you all think like the these are actual downsides that we're talking about? Like, so the loss of like some architectural design, the loss of like nostalgia that we might place in buildings and things like that.
Yeah.
Are these downsides or just like side effects?
I think it's a mix.
Yeah.
I mean, look at a place like this, where this is a place that has a lot of structural character and like probably a mechanics garage or something like that before. Like, if this was made out of iMod structures, it wouldn't have been like repurposed into an artist studio. It would have been like moved where they needed another type of that building.
Right.
And I think, you know, so much of what makes a house cool or interesting is that character and history. Thinking about in San Francisco, all the loft places where like old warehouses along the water got turned into these live work lofts, and they have just this tremendous amount of character. And then we started designing loft style apartment buildings that are sort of trying to fake that because right. people mm-hmm. want that so much. And I think about just how much of what character we see in things is just us repurposing something that's sort of wrong for the task, but still charmingly adequate for it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would hate to live in a city with nothing but these structures.
Right.
If it was only these structures and this is the only thing that existed, I think that would suck, right? Like, I think that there's a value to, mm-hmm. you know, homes and the opera house and like this restaurant, like all being really bespoke and all that. But a lot of stuff doesn't need to be that. Like,
yeah.
we just went to a Walgreens. I don't need that. I don't need that Walgreens to be very interesting.
I mean, this is Los Angeles. So, you know, there's a lot yeah. of buildings. So you're like, I kind of just want to get in and get out, and it doesn't need to look interesting. And it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah. And it sort of, it seems like it's just sort of waiting to be torn down anyway.
Yeah.
So why don't they just make it into something that's designed to be torn down and repurposed?
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. You know, I feel like once you get into these debates about like, what should a building mean to you and stuff like right. that, people always have these like, oh, here's my favorite building and every building should be like that. But in reality, you know, you drive down, there's a Walgreens, there's a shoe store, there's a liquor store, there's a CVS, whatever. Like most buildings are unremarkable and it's fine. It's never ruined my day, you know? Yeah.
Right.
And also like the flip side is that there are some buildings that look cool at the time. You know, I've 70s office towers in my neighborhoods that now look horribly out of date. I mean, again, put it in perspective, I don't really care that much, but it would certainly be nice if they could like modernize it easily.
You know? Yeah. Before we move on to sort of the next segment of the podcast, I would love for you to talk about the building standards, because that's something we actually didn't get really yeah. into in the episode. And just like, how much are they abiding by like codes and all this stuff? Like how like, the structural integrity of these IMOD boxes, like what are they like and like what sort of standards and practices do they go through?
That's a great question. So, and it isn't something that we spend adequate amount of time on it. One of the things that I think people might think when they see that is, oh, it's a container. It is not a container. This is not a repurposed container. They have re-engineered that structure from scratch. So for example, there's a trend towards building container homes where you take a 40 foot long container, you cut some holes for windows and walls and you stack them and get creative with them. And that's cool. The problem with those is when you cut into those corrugated steel walls, you lose a lot of structural integrity real fast. So they don't actually, they're problematic in a lot of ways. So you have to be very careful in how you use them. The IMOD structures have no walls. They're built, the frame is just those edges, right? And they've engineered those beams to be super strong and to meet very high standards. So this doesn't require walls to give it structural integrity, unlike a container. It's meant to be structurally sound on its own.
And that what's interesting about that is the customization, therefore. So your walls can be kind of interesting because right. they don't need to hold as much structural integrity.
Yeah.
That's where you get that customization.
Yeah, and that way you can have stack three or four together and create a really long space, as opposed to, you know, with a container home, you kind of have to stack them at odd angles, or you can only offset them and you have to keep those walls. Otherwise you lose that integrity really fast.
I mean, I was really impressed by within each of these containers, how much kind of thought and technology is in all of them. I mean, we go into like how there's a slope to each of the roofs so that like all the water drains in a certain way. There's air ducts in all of them so you can have heating and air conditioning, like be able to go through all of them. And, you know, they engineered it because there's so little space there. I think those things are about 9 feet tall each. And so they're like, all right, we have like less than a foot in order to get all this ducting
yeah.
in here. They have all the electrical and plumbing just like already hooked up into all those spaces. So you look at them and it looks really boring and uninteresting, but there's so much that's happening in there. And it's all with this purpose of being able to like stack them really easily, hook them up really quickly, and then be able to tear them apart.
Yeah, and they've done a good job of hiding the technology.
Yeah.
And like, you don't notice all the ducting and all that because they have made this big, bare, open space to use, which is great.
One of the biggest things that came up in the audience comments was like, how does this hold up in the wake of a natural disaster? How structurally sound is it? You know, how tall can you stack them and still have it be resistant to winds and hurricanes and things like that? Mm-hmm. So we touched on that, but I'm curious for you to go into a little more depth about like the limits of it and how far it's designed.
Yeah, that was one of their primary concerns at the company, and the company they're working with right now is also that they've partnered with for their new incarnation, I guess, as they start up again, is primarily focused on earthquake safety. Mm-hmm. And so these are built to be super safe in an earthquake with a great deal of thought and care into like, how much can the frame twist and without breaking any of the windows, and how do they build? They've built in systems so that the glass walls can be put on there that won't be impacted or shattered if the building shakes.
We talked to that earthquake engineer actually when mm-hmm. we were thinking about the episode. Yeah. We had done like a lot of research with them in order to like create this design.
Yeah, and it's so these are built for heavy duty earthquakes. These are built to be to withstand that and stay structurally sound and safe and even reusable afterwards.
Yeah, and I think my recollection is that you can stack two mm-hmm. on top of one another.
Yeah, it's at least two. I think it might be three, but I think it's two.
It's two right now, especially for the schools, and then I think they're looking to do three or four.
Yeah.
Once you're getting to that point, though, there's probably additional structuring that you would need to go mm-hmm. around there. I mean, one of the things I thought what's interesting about the school that we visited and the reason that it didn't look like this big container thing is that they still had to build stairs for there. There's an elevator shaft that, you know, is, you know, built into here. They structure them like a little courtyard. So there's all these additional things that you kind of have to do in order to make them, you know, functional. Mm-hmm. But what I love about, you know, Reed and his comments on this is like, we're making one thing. We're going to do one thing again and again and again, and we're not going to actually do customization.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We tried to highlight the fact that people have been talking about modular for decades and decades. You know, it's been almost a century that mm-hmm. people have been trying to get this modular thing together, but it's like modular plus customization, which is like,
yeah,
those two things don't go together.
Yeah. And I think I want to double click on that because I think that's really important. Like how he makes a comparison also to Legos. Now, Legos are a fairly limited set of shapes, but they can be combined into a thousand, a million, and countless numbers of cool configurations.
Oh no, we got Nick on the Legos but like, conversation.
But you don't have to think that. I mean, just a red brick, just a plain old red brick. I mean, that can be combined in all these crazy configurations, and you see really beautiful brickwork all over the place. So it's a very boring elemental shape in and of itself. While it isn't customized, well, it doesn't have that cool, I think it's a nascent technology in that a lot of people in the next, you know, as this becomes more common, I think more people will start figuring out, well, what if we did a stack of them this way? And what if we use this, mix them with this technology? I think there will be some cool things that architects and people who are thinking about space differently start to play around with it. And that's true of every technology. Like, I don't think anyone anticipated how impactful something like an iPhone would be until everyone started writing apps for it. And then it really changed the world. And the more biomass it gets exposed to, the more like human creativity gets exposed to, the more we'll see this come together to create really cool structures.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up IKEA earlier, mm-hmm. right? And you know, one of my favorite parts about IKEA are like the IKEA hacks and like all the different people that come up with their own customizations. So there's like the closet or the kitchen cabinets where a lot of people are just buying like the kind of raw form there. And then there's third party companies that do just like the doors, just the finishes, which is like the thing where you can bring in your own personality. But the rest of the structure is like, you don't want to spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be more and more the case with something like this.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of people in their comments who are like, oh, you know, you could actually make historical veneers or something like yeah. that. Like you could match the facade to the type of city you wanted or reuse it and, you know, stuff like that. So it was cool to see like just people's gears getting turning about all of the potential implications of it.
I mean, I love Tiny House Nation, right? I mean, we're talking about things that are very much in the same space and all the, like the container housing that's come about where people's creativity is like amazing with things that are have a relatively high number of constraints.
Yeah.
It's also interesting because when you look at the comment section, you always realize that the YouTube algorithm that has sent people to your video has also sent them to XYZ video.
Right.
So I had no idea how much people knew about shipping container homes, but there's this idea that like it became like a cliche in design schools or whatever that like, we're going to make everything out of shipping containers. So it's going to be fast and cheap and modular. And then there's a big debunking video that went super viral about this is why shipping containers are actually awful to build out of.
Right.
You don't have the structural integrity. You need like 3 feet of insulation. It's probably already contaminated if it's been used in international shipping, blah, 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 blah. But what I love about this is that it takes the thing that was actually exciting about it, you know, the modularity of it, and it makes it better. And then it strips away those elements that people are familiar with now have, you know, those huge shortcomings. And so it's really exciting to see what could be built with this like new iteration of that idea.
Yeah. And, you know, we say that they did this in partnership with Maersk. And part of it is like the actual size, but it's also like the little hookups and little holes that they have on the ends that allow like the big crane to come in at the exact right point and hook that up. And like the little bolt that's going to hook these two things up. It's all these like little details that are absolutely ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite things about this story is that a lot of this is all built on a very basic piece of technology that we take for granted. And that's that twist lock connector, which is at the corner of every container that you see on a Maersk shipping line. Ship. It's how these things all stack together. And it's enabled those to quickly go from a ship to a truck, for a ship to a train, or a train to a truck, or whatever. And it essentially makes this a ubiquitous worldwide platform for moving large things around. But like, you can start in like Duluth and have a container, put it on a train that goes to there, and that ship can take it to anywhere in the world, and they're going to be able to hook it up on their trains. And it's like, it's a worldwide platform. That is crazy. And it's kind of amazing to see something that's transformative for international trade also starting to be like ubiquitous in like construction, to be able to use that to put these things together. That is really, I think, one of the coolest parts of the story that we unfortunately didn't have time in this video to dive in as much as I liked. But it's just one of those things that you see every day. You see this thing every day, and it's amazing, and it's so boring, but it's so powerful.
Toby, you mentioned that you were able to tell because of just the amount of people who commented on the video, like that seems like folks had watched some other videos on YouTube that were similar. I'm curious in general though, like what was the comment sentiment on this video? Was it, or did folks believe this to be a real thing? Did they think it was like vaporware, or we were like selling hype? Like what was the sentiment?
It was pretty positive. You know, I think people liked it. People liked the idea that it could change not just buildings, but cities. People, you know, had different ideas of things you could do with them. There were those questions about cost was one, you know, these are all like evergreen questions on any new technology, which is valid. You know, what does it cost? Like, are you going to be able to have people in every city who are going to be able to assemble these? How much electricity does it take, you know, et cetera. Those sort of sustainability questions come up. But people were pretty positive overall. There weren't like people who were just hating on the concept of it in general. I mean, there's always a few.
But was like, that one?
In general, it was pretty good.
You know, it's hard to think of a way that like a normal person who's not involved in building things could even like interface with this piece of technology or this innovation. But is there any type of way for people to become connected or utilize this this piece of technology outside of being involved in the construction industry or deciding what materials we build buildings out of?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's really commercially ready for like consumers directly at this point. So this is not something, it doesn't seem like you could as a hobbyist buy some of these. It's the same way you can do with container homes. You probably can't do that. However, these are going to be more and more common, I believe, whether or not it's Simon Systems or whomever takes over this technology and runs with it. I do believe you'll see more of this, especially now that we have had to rebuild so many communities. And I think if you are someone who's working towards rebuilding your school district or rebuilding your town, these are folks you want to look at and you want to reach out to, because I think it's a tremendous resource as we start to look at how can we quickly rebuild these really devastated communities.
I will say there is a one way that I will plug to get involved, which is that whether it's iMod or someone else, there's so many companies that are creating prefab construction, modular construction in different forms. And one of the big barriers, whether it's to having sufficient housing, to having sustainable cities and stuff like that, is just our zoning code, which is largely determined by like people who show up at community meetings and like give their input.
Absolutely.
So you can definitely get involved if you want to see this in your community at a local level and advocate for more flexible building codes and in this sort of technology. Most people probably, especially in local government, you know, may not even be aware of it. So it's a good thing to get on people's radar.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, in my backyard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's something that has become a trend in a lot of the things we're seeing in building is new ways of building things. We covered that with when we talked to with back at Node, where they're really trying to find new ways of building buildings. And there are these sorts of legal and legislative and zoning hurdles. And oftentimes that is what's stopping some of these things from taking off more so than any of the building or the technology side of things. Mm. Yeah. We can figure out new ways of building, but getting it to interface with a building code or with zoning laws that really don't understand it is where we're really struggling. So that's a great point.
Yeah, it's an interesting contrast too, because you think about like some of the innovation that we've had, you know, in the past 10 years, there's a lot of permissionless innovation where people are just like Uber and they just come in and it's like, stop us, try. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with buildings. It's a little bit too permanent to do right. that. Yep. And so it's interesting to think about, there is this sort of like, policy-based way that people can do get involved. And it is very local. And local participatory governments is a thing that you can actually get involved in and have meaningful change mm-hmm. with a very small amount of people. And so show up to those community meetings because they are actually kind of important for yeah. things like that.
I think that the other way is the field of architecture seems to be changing so much 100%. Because there's so much like demand on infill and, you know, just also the mentality shift where, you know, it's like, does each of these things need to be this bespoke, interesting, blah, 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 or can it be more functional? Mm-hmm. And I was seeing things in where people are designing cities or buildings in Unity, just amateurs, right? Mm-hmm. And like that's very much influencing how people are thinking about like the built environment. So what I'm curious about with, it's obviously it started with the containers, but going beyond that, like how are people thinking about just like the really creative, beautiful ways that you could take something that is a boring structure like this and make it really interesting?
Yeah.
That is an interesting thing. It would be fun to see something like this in a Sim City or in some other type of game like that and see what people create, because that might also unleash some interesting like, oh, we could do this differently.
Yeah.
And here's an example of that. And oh, here's the CAD file.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You look at all those pictures from, was it Santorini in Greece, where it's just like everything's all white and mm-hmm. all the houses look exactly the same. It's like, well, maybe this is kind of like a newer version of this where everything's going to look kind of same. And at the macro view, like it actually looks really beautiful. There's something mm-hmm. really gorgeous about just like the symmetry and the unity with regards to all of it.
Yeah.
We forget even a lot of our current neighborhoods were like built from Sears kits like 80 years ago, you know? So it's like the modular technology of their day. And also some of like the most creative, beautiful things have come out of these simple, modular, ubiquitous things when it's, you know, graffiti or, you know, just like people doing really creative things. In Albania, for example, there was some crazy dictator who built millions of pillboxes across the entire countryside.
To define that for folks who aren't familiar with the term pillbox.
Like a reinforced machine gun nest, right. Basically.
A cozy home, basically.
Yeah, you know. So people have now redeveloped them into stores or quirky things, art projects, homes, whatever. You know, and you actually see that a fair amount across the Eastern Bloc, where there were these like very dreary mass-produced housing. But like, you know, in Hungary, for example, there's all these cool bars that are now, that people have gutted older buildings and now put into. So creating just the framework for people to be creative can create beautiful things in addition to things being created from the ground up to be beautiful.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, it's a bit of a tangent, but it reminds me of like uniforms at schools, where mm-hmm. I remember doing an interview at a school when all the kids had uniforms. And so I asked this kid who had like bright purple hair, does it bother you not being able to express yourself with your clothing? He's like, actually, no, it's just one less thing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And I can actually get to know more people who I wouldn't otherwise get to know. And so mm-hmm. he's like, I'm into punk rock music, but I can talk to this guy who's into country music. And we don't have this barrier between us. And it allows us to find other ways to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because instead of using this very obvious way to express ourselves, we have to really connect and express ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have something that's like a very anonymous house, mm-hmm. the way you express yourself is what's on the inside or the way you paint it. And there's still a really great, vibrant way of expressing who you are that doesn't require you to have an architect and a custom structure built. And it's very expensive and prohibitive. Like the things get cheaper, and they'd be still our way for you to make that home you. Mm-hmm.
This also sort of hits to your uniforms example also hits to another thing that I think was interesting about Steve Jobs is that he wore the same outfit mm-hmm. because he didn't want to use the brain power on that. and you wanted to focus on other things. It does make me think about, like, if we were to standardize this for some sets of buildings, what other energies could we then devote to bigger problems that are probably worth more attention? Mm-hmm. So there are some interesting trade-offs and, like, unseen benefits that are hard to sort of put your finger on, but it would probably be nice if we could organize in some type of way around that stuff.
So, Toby, the most important thing for me is just making sure I hear all the really negative and mean comments, because I think that's really where YouTube shines. So I'm curious, what were some of the meanest or most negative comments you got?
Well, there was a particular sentiment that was expressed by numerous commentators that I really loved. Christian Lindholm says, "This is Lego, shows off-brand toy that is not Lego."
They're not wrong. And that was my fault. They're right. I take full responsibility. I should have filmed real Legos. They were off-brand Legos. They were some C-list building block, and I don't know why that slipped through. So I apologize to all our audience that next time I will use real Legos. So,
well, it got me sort of thinking, you know, because we also had in the packaging had to dance around, like, it's Lego-like building, you right. know? But at some point, why doesn't Lego just start building construction materials, you know?
That's
they
a great
have the
question.
Name brand.
I mean, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I mean, most of my house is filled with Legos right now. So, yeah.
It's too much.
It's a lot.
He'll buy Legos for himself before he buys them for his son, which is a weird thing.
Well, I'm better at putting them together. For now.
That's the only one I have.
Wow. Oh man. Wow.
I was expecting something both meaner and yet less cutting. So, but that really did get, yeah. that really did cut to the bone.
Yeah. I was expecting a little bit of the, like, you will own nothing and be happy style vibes.
Oh, right.
We have plenty of those.
Yeah. I find, but no, the Lego thing, it cuts deep. You're right. Yeah. Cuts deep. It's a personal failing.
So I think that concludes this episode of the Hard Reset podcast about the iMod episode. If you haven't watched the episode, check the link in the description below so you can watch it. And I am Rob Chapman Smith with Nick Tucker, Taylor Hamilton, and Toby Murashanu. Please hit the like button and subscribe to our channel if you want to see more episodes of the Hard Reset podcast.
And if you don't, please like and subscribe anyway.
Yeah. Just like and subscribe. It just helps.
Just do that. Period. Just do that.